Hello, my guys, gals, and non-binary pals. You are listening to Voices of Montreal Panacea on CKUT 90.3 FM. It's me, your host, Michelle. And it's 10 months of the show, so that's like super exciting. But honestly, this month has been a bit of a wild ride for me. So we're actually going to slow things down a bit this month and focus a little bit more on music and groove. And we're going to talk about some universe lessons that I think have been reoccurring for me. And then we're just going to quickly wrap up the cluster B disorders that we went over. But let's start with some music. This is Back on 74 by Jungle. Bug. Okay, now we're good. Bye. Now it's 500 Days of Summer by Grady.
This feels like the part of 500 Days of Summer where the playing you make my dreams come true. I don't usually do this, but I think you're the coolest person ever. Fuck! I feel the emotion. The giant's awoken, cause you're sick and I suck being calm when I want what I want and I want it. Oh, you're more refreshing than a cold Sprite. Didn't even notice that my phone died. Don't remember future looking so bright. My psyche said to me that I should hold tight. Oh, my head is feeling like a gold mine. I don't see how we could have a dull night.
wanna be so under. Hold my, I don't wanna be so under.
I don't use horoscopes for guidance, but I can still notice the alignment. And I know that it's all about the timing, but I can't fucking wait. And I'm not sorry, I'm excited. Ooh. Didn't even notice that my phone died. Don't remember future looking so bright. The psychic said to me that I should hold tight. Ooh. My head is feeling like a gold mine. I don't see how we could have a dull night. I don't wanna be so on the whole pie. I don't wanna be so on the.
Okay, so what I was saying was this month has been pretty a wild ride. So I turned a year older this month, had the least enjoyable birthday, but that doesn't mean it was bad. It was just like the least enjoyable, but they were all enjoyable. Then my personal life fell to shambles over Thanksgiving. So that was super epic. And I kept receiving bad news on bad news on bad news. And so my heart has been pretty heavy this month, and I feel like I can't take any more heaviness. And so, but at the same time, I have like joie de vivre, but I'm also fueled by rage and des clopes. So there's a weird balance right now. Quite fun though, working with it. And so that's why today we won't be really introducing any new topics or getting into it as we usually do. But I think it'll be just helpful if we wrap up on our introduction to personality disorders by finishing the cluster B ones that we didn't get to. And so, before we get into that, I think I just want to talk a little bit more about share some of my own experiences, because I feel like I haven't gotten a chance to do that the last few months. So recently I've become more aware of the recurring themes that come up in my life. And by that, I just mean lessons that keep appearing in different forms. And two of the main ones that I, well, one, the two that I've, blah, there's two. The first main one is to trust that everything that works, that's going to work out for me will. And so to have faith and hope in the future and to have patience and trust in myself at the same time, especially I think as I'm entering to the workforce, which like is a disgusting thought, honestly, but I don't know, there's so much pressure to have like a great job, to find your dream job, to have a high paying job or a stable job in like the industry, your industry of choice, and be set on a pathway for the next, what, like 40 years. And it's so hard not to compare myself with other people. And I'm sure that it's really hard not to compare yourself. But I think the universe is really trying to tell me that everyone's path is different. And I'm also in my 20s and I have so much time to learn and explore and try new things. But at the same time, as someone with mad anxiety and ADHD, I need answers and I need structure. So people are always like, oh yeah, well, things will work out and things will always like find their way. But I'm like, how? Tell me how. Tell me exactly what I need to do to get to where I am. Like, I'll do it. I need the structure. So anyways, that's been a weird path that I've been trying to balance, just between trusting, but also putting in the work to get to where I need to be. And the second theme is filling my cup, as in like literally taking care of myself, doing the basic shit, giving the love that I pour into others, into myself, which honestly sounds really good on paper. But to be honest, not that exciting for some reason to me. Like, why is it so much easier to take care of others when you're struggling, right? I think part of the reason is because I've been ignoring my own needs, because taking care of myself means acknowledging that something's wrong and like really unpacking what's going on and doing a lot of work and growth and change and self-care is work, right? It's a lot of work. It takes a lot of your cognitive load. It takes a lot of your self-control resources. And sometimes all my resources are being devoted to being able to function. And so sometimes it feels better to shut that part down and not feel and numb myself by focusing on other people, by focusing on work, right? Because a lot of the times, a lot of my energy is being devoted to like being able to go to bed at a proper time, waking up, making sure that I wake up and I'm taking care of myself in the morning, I'm feeding myself, which are things that I haven't been devoting energy and time towards. But someone I love recently told me that my primary responsibility to others is to take care of myself. And I've heard that before, right? I've read it before, I've seen it 1,000 times, but this time for some reason it really struck a chord with me. Because I'm an older sibling, and so I've been like taking on the burden of taking care of my younger siblings and making sure that they're okay before I make sure that I'm okay. And so being reminded that my responsibility to others is to take care of myself was really important for me to hear at the time. And then my psychiatrist and I were talking about my sleep schedule because it's actually shambolic right now. And it's also been affecting my self-talk and my productivity, and that just creates this positive feedback loop of like compounding negativity in my life. And she told me that sometimes it's important to fill your cup in the morning before you begin work so that you can be more focused. And I know that, like, I've been knowing that, right? But also have not been implementing it. And so I've been starting to do something to fill my cup either before or after I start work, instead of just like working to no end and getting my soul sucked in the library. Yeah, the library is literally like the Gluck Luck 3000 of soul sucking, so it's pretty crazy. Anyways, so no matter what time I wake up, I always try and go on a walk or go outside. Before I start my work, I grab breakfast, I watch a show. I've been watching anime. I watch Jujutsu Kaisen, and it's so good. And everyone should watch it, because I used to be an anime skeptic, and I was like, no. And then I got into anime, and now I'm trying to convince every single person I know to watch. So if you don't have anything to do and you're looking for a new show, watch Jujutsu Kaisen. New episodes come out every Thursday. This is a shameless plug. Anyways, so yeah, I've been doing, I don't know, I do something that I want to do because I want to do it before I do things that I have to do. And so I've found a lot of importance in intrinsic motivation in the things that I do. And so I started learning how to code, which has been fun. And I've been learning about physics. And I started taking this course on the history of rock and reading a lot of books. And so going back to this confusion about my future, I'm considering going back to school and getting a second degree in physics, but I also don't know at the same time. But then I'm like, okay, you're telling me that I'm supposed to trust that everything's going to work out for me, but how is it going to work out if I don't make the choice to go back to school? So that's a weird... So I think it just is forcing me to become more in tune with my own needs, which I feel like oftentimes we can be really disconnected from them because we see a lot of information on social media from our education, from our peers that tell us what we should be doing and, you know, what the typical or average path should be like. But that's not a prerogative. Like, it's not something that's set in stone, and it's not objective, and it's not the same for everyone. And so, yeah, taking the time to tune in with my own needs is something that's is really hard because it requires slowing down and focusing on yourself. So next month I'm actually going to do and I've been learning how to DJ. So that's been fun. Yeah. So I'm a human. I'm not perfect. I'm not going to be a consistent cog that's constantly churning out results. So thank you for being patient with me this month. Next month, I think we're going to do some cool stuff, and some of my friends are going to come on the show. And we're going to talk about mindfulness and meditation and urban planning. And so this is one of the songs that I learned about in my history of rock class and when learning about like the history of jazz and stuff. This is D'Angelo, Feel Like Making Love. Okay, pause. It's not playing. We're having a bit of a snoofah because I'm not logged into my own stuff. Anyways, okay, we can talk about cluster B personality disorders. So last month we had Jack on the show and we talked about, borderline personality disorder and their experiences living with BPD. And before that, we went over the cluster A and cluster B PDs, we talked about histrionic personality disorder as being part of the cluster B personality disorders. So we're missing two. We're missing narcissistic personality disorder, and we're also missing antisocial personality disorder. And so these are kind of connected, and these are two of the personality disorders that come up a lot when we're talking about research into criminology and the justice system. So, narcissistic personality disorder is characterized by an exaggerated sense of self-importance, and a preoccupation with being admired, and a lack of empathy for the feelings of others and self-promotion. And so a core belief that typically tends to characterize narcissistic PD is, since I'm special, I deserve special rules. And so there's actually two different subtypes of narcissistic PD. The first one is grandiose narcissism, which includes traits related to extreme grandiosity, aggression, and dominance. And so individuals living with grandiose narcissistic PD have a strong tendency to overestimate their own abilities and accomplishments while underestimating those of others. And also, it's important to note that we do this. This is a cognitive bias that we have, that where we overestimate our abilities and our accomplishments and we attribute them to ourselves while we attribute other people's failures to personal dispositional traits, while we attribute other people's successes to environmental traits like by chance and stuff. And so that's something important to be aware of, that, you know, a lot of these traits or symptoms or diagnostic criteria that we see for personality disorders and just anything that you see in the DSM-5 is characterized by behavior that we also tend to display. It's just like on a spectrum, at what point does that start to interfere with your life? And then that's when a diagnostic label may be introduced. So, grandiose narcissism also comes with a sense of entitlement, right? So a lot of individuals tend to see their expectations as what they deserve. However, these expectations are obviously not always rational or logical. And people also can behave in stereotypical ways by making, for example, constant self-references, bragging, and other methods to bring the attention onto themselves in order to gain acclaim and recognition. And so something that also comes with this belief of being special is that they tend to think that they can only be understood by other high status people or only associated with those kinds of people. And so that can create a lot of strain in interpersonal relationships when you're trying to become friends or you have some sort of relationship with someone living with narcissistic personality disorder, because they tend to see people who aren't on the same status as them as unworthy of their friendship. And so another important interpersonal part of personality disorders, especially grandiose narcissism, is that friends and family may be more distressed about their behavior than they are themselves, right? Because we often don't think of personality as something that affects the way that we view and interact with the world. We just think of our personalities as ourselves. And so we don't usually like to think that there's anything wrong with ourselves. And then the other subtype of narcissistic personality disorder is vulnerable narcissism. And so this is actually characterized by a fragile and unstable sense of self-esteem. And so the arrogance and condescension that we see these people tend to display is a facade for their intense feelings of shame and hypersensitivity to rejection and criticism. And so this can involve becoming really absorbed and preoccupied with fantasies of outstanding achievement, but also experiencing a lot of shame about their ambitions at the same time. And so this causes a really big dichotomy in like the way that they interact with the world and the way that they interact with people, and also in the way that they view themselves. And so this can lead to an avoidance of interpersonal relationships because a lot of people have a fear of rejection or criticism. And so we have to understand what's underlying these behaviors that we see, because typically the behaviors that we see, we often can't take at face value. There's a lot of underlying cognitive mechanisms at play and a lot of, you know, irrational beliefs about the self and about relationships that cause individuals to display certain kinds of behavior that we may see, that neurotypical and mentally, that people not living with mental illness may see as, you know, irrational or rude or quote unquote weird. That's kind of what's underlying these experiences and displays of behavior. And so both subtypes are associated with the personality traits that we learned about last 2 months ago, I think now. So they are conscientiousness, agreeableness, neuroticism, extroversion, and openness to experience. And so both of these subtypes of narcissistic PD are associated with high levels of interpersonal antagonism, also known as low agreeableness. So this includes traits like low modesty, arrogance, grandiosity, and superiority. There's low altruism, which is when you expect, so if you're doing something for someone else, it's not an altruistic behavior. You're expecting favorable treatment back, and you exploit others. And there's tough-mindedness, which is a lack of empathy, right? So a lot of people living with narcissistic PD fail to engage in empathetic perspective taking and typically see the world from an egocentric perspective. And so if they don't receive some sort of validation or assistance that they desire from other people, individuals living with narcissistic PD may be inclined to be hypercritical and retaliatory because either they're afraid of the rejection that they may experience in these interpersonal relationships, or because they believe that they deserve special recognition. So I spieled for a while. I'm going to play Feel Like Making Love by D'Angelo now, and hopefully it works, but nothing's perfect. So bear with me.
Feel like me.
That second song was Shaky in the Knees by Grizz Folk. I love that song. Holy shit. Okay. So, we're just going to talk about the last of the Cluster B personality disorders. This one is antisocial personality disorder, or I'm going to use ASPD for short because this is like a tongue twister. So, ASPD is characterized by a tendency to persistently disregard and violate the rights of others through a combination of deceitful, aggressive, and antisocial behaviors. And so ASPD is characterized by a lifelong pattern of unsocialized and typically irresponsible behaviors with little regard for the safety of themselves or others. And this can result in repeated conflicts with the rules of society, and many people living with ASPD can end up in trouble with the law. And so ASPD just typically describes a lack of moral or ethical development and an inability to follow approved models of behavior, manipulation of others, and a history of conduct problems as a child. And so actually what we find is that over 80% of an incarcerated population will satisfy the criteria for antisocial personality disorder. And so the core belief is typically something like, I am entitled to break rules. And only people above the age of 18, so only adults, can be diagnosed with ASPD. And so for a diagnosis, the person also must have had shown symptoms of conduct disorder, which is a developmental diagnosis, before the age of 15. After the age of 15, there must be evidence of repeated unlawful behavior, deceitfulness, impulsivity, aggressiveness, or constant irresponsibility in work and financial matters. And so the DSM-5 criteria places a really heavy emphasis on observable behaviors like lying, getting into fights, or failing to honor financial obligations. In psychopathy, so ASPD and psychopathy there is a bit of overlap. However, in psychopathy, more attention is paid to personality characteristics. And so DSM-5 places more emphasis on observable behaviors for ASPD, whereas for psychopathy, personality characteristics like superficial charm, lack of empathy, and manipulativeness are more emphasized. And so the prevalence of ASPD in the population is around 2-3%, and it's more common in men than women. So men is around 3% and women is around 1%, and it's a very common in prison sample. So around 47% of incarcerated males and 21% of incarcerated females qualify for this diagnosis. And there's a lot of, so when we talk about what gives rise to certain personality disorders, it can be very difficult to disentangle the nature and nurture interacting. And so there's a lot of interactions with your genes and your environment at the same time. And so environmental factors like low family income, poor supervision by parents, having a young mother, being raised in a single parent family, conflict between parents, having a delinquent sibling, familial neglect, having a large family size and harsh discipline from parents are also are environmental factors that have been implicated in determining who's at a higher risk of later developing antisocial personality disorder. And so this also has a lot to do with your peer groups. And so in one of my criminology classes, I learned that there's this like 5-step pathway that you can go from childhood to developing ASPD in adulthood and then later being incarcerated. And so having delinquent peers and the social peer groups that you surround yourself with have a really big impact, especially when you're a child and you're in grade school. Your conduct disorder or your other behavioral tendencies may lead you to seek out or lead other people to seek out you that share the same behavioral tendencies. And this can cause sort of like an echo chamber where you serve to exacerbate each other and again, a positive feedback loop. And so one really cool study, so a lot of genotype environment interactions will determine which individuals have antisocial personalities. And so it's not that if you have the genes, you're automatically going to develop ASPD. And it's not that if you have these environmental factors, you're going to develop ASPD. It's always an interaction of some sort of the two. And so one such study found that adopted away children of biological parents with antisocial personality disorder. So the biological parent has antisocial personality disorder, and their child who was adopted is more likely to develop antisocial personalities if their adoptive parents expose them to an adverse environment than if their adoptive parents expose them to a more quote-unquote typical environment. And so adverse environments can include things like marital conflict or divorce, legal problems, and parental psychopathology. And so adoptive parents also play a big role in the development of of later diagnostic labels, basically. So this is evidence that it's not just any one gene or gene interaction. It's not just the environment. It's the gene-environment interaction that gives rise. And so also oftentimes we hear of, you know, the MAOA gene. I don't know, I've read this in CSI, I think, or Criminal Minds or something. But basically, the MAOA gene, or the monoamine oxidase A gene, is involved in the breakdown of neurotransmitters like norepinephrine or adrenaline, and dopamine and serotonin. And these are all neurotransmitters that can be affected by the stress of maltreatment, which can lead to aggressive behavior. And so in your environments, if you're experiencing maltreatment, they can create or result in a deficiency of these neurotransmitters. So a study found that but a lot of people associate this MAOA gene with typically violent and aggressive behaviors, but that isn't always the case, because there's a lot of people who have this MAOA gene or one variation of this gene and don't display antisocial personality disorder or don't display aggressive behaviors. And so another cool study found that individuals with low MAOA activity, so a low breakdown of neurotransmitters, were more likely to develop antisocial personality disorder if they had experienced early maltreatment than individuals with higher MAOA activity and early maltreatment, and individuals with low levels of MAOA activity without early maltreatment. That was a lot of words and a lot of things. It's kind of hard to visualize when it's not in front of you, but basically, if you have low MAOA activity, you're more likely to develop ASPD, but only if you had experienced early adverse environments growing up. And so this is another evidence of, you know, the genetic involvement, but also the way that your genes interact with your environment to produce some of the symptoms that we see, and that may later confer to a diagnostic label. And so there is a lot of genetic involvement in comorbidity between ASPD and other disorders. So for example, alcoholism and antisocial personality disorder have, there's a significant genetic involvement between the two. And so externalizing disorders like alcohol and drug use and chronic disorder all share this common genetic vulnerability. However, this vulnerability can give rise to a bunch of different things. So, for example, if you had a seed and you planted it in the ground, but depending on like the nitrogen and phosphorus levels in the soil, you can grow different plants. Let's just imagine that. I don't know if this is the best analogy, but let's just imagine that you have this magical seed that can grow a bunch of different plants, depending on how you water it, how much sun you give it, and how much fertilizer that you use. The watering, the sun, and the fertilizer are environmental factors. And so depending on which environmental factors that you have experienced, they will determine which disorder a particular person develops. So they all start from this same common genetic vulnerability, but what comes out of it, the genetic vulnerability gives rise to in terms of a diagnostic label, depends on these environmental factors. Yeah, so there is a lot of emphasis on the home environment in childhood growing up when we think about antisocial personality disorder. And so this is because this also has to do with the parental psychopathology. So if a parent has this underlying gene, they might be passing it down to their child, and if they have this gene, it also means that their behavior and the way that they interact with the world is obviously going to be changed, right? Because of this genetic vulnerability that they have. And so because they're interacting with the environment in a different way, the environment that the child is going to be born into is inherently already one that is more likely to give rise to the development of ASPD. And so it's very hard to separate nature and nurture, especially when, you know, your genes affect the parents and the parents affect the genes of the child, but parents also affect the environment of the child as well. So with all of that spieled, let's go back to listening to some more fun music. This next song I actually just discovered yesterday. My friend made me a playlist. And I really liked it. Like the second I heard it come on, I was like, this one looks fun. So this is called In the Night by Son and Star.
You're smiling now. loneliness in the summer, different desire. We can be what we wanna, call it the skies. Rolling stones from my old last home. We can be what we wanna. There's so much more to life. Picking flowers from the rubble. I'm not thinking twice. Vivid, never subtle. Our memories were right. The moon still guides me, no matter where you are. If I put it all behind me, we'll have a place to start. Came here,
thank you for tuning in to CKUT 90.3. This is Voices of Montreal, Panacea, with your host, Michelle. And we're going to close off today's segment with Trouble by Elvis Presley.
If you're looking for trouble, you came to the right place. If you're looking for trouble, just look right in my face. I was born standing up and talking back. My daddy was a green-eyed mountain jack because I'm around with me. I never looked for trouble, but I never ran. I don't take no orders, no kind of man. I'm only made out of flesh, blood, and bone. But if you're gonna start a rumble, don't you try at all alone, because I'm around with me.
Hubert, Gaurav, Amy, Drew, Faiz, and Nathan, and to David for bringing the banners, beautiful Spencer from CKUT, and everybody else for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks, Stefan.
I went to residential school. I was just 8 years old.
Gayla Kasla. My name is Gennarji O'Sullivan of the Tlaweetsis Nation, originally from Turner Island. You're listening to Window, exploring the legacy of Indian residential schools.
Our next speaker here is Viola Thomas. She is also a residential school survivor.
Part of our obligation where I work with the Truth and Reconciliation Commission of Canada is to inform Canadians on the truth. But I believe that as more Canadian people understand that this was Canadian law and Canadian policy, and that Canadians need to take responsibility for their shared history, I also believe that Canadians have a responsibility to resonate reconciliation with the First Peoples of this country. And what did we learn when we went to this school? We learned how to be bullies, how to be mean to each other, how not to love, how not to feel a great sense of pride of who you are and where you come from. I learned about racism, and I didn't know what that was. I really didn't know what racism was.